Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Yes, welcome in to another edition of UAP Weekly. Stephen Diener back with you here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast Weekly Edition. And, well, we've got another interview for you, and it is really another barn burner, a brain teaser, whatever you want to say. It is something that is really going to make you think, at least it did for me, because this is where I bring back on Ashton Forbes. You would know him from Twitter, where he does a lot of his activity, but he's been on many podcasts, made a lot of appearances over the past 6 months with a lot of people, and of course, his main project being that of the missing MH370 flight, which was interesting because when I booked this interview with him, I didn't even realize, and shame on me, I guess I just wasn't paying attention, but I didn't even realize that we are coming across the 10th anniversary of the disappearance of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. Happened on March 8th, 2014. I can't believe that it's just about 10 years ago now from this day as we speak here and put this one out. So it's Ashton Forbes, it's myself, and it is a lot of conversation surrounding MH370 and the final conclusions that he draws. Because you'll hear during this interview that Ashton is actually moving away from this investigation. He wants to focus on some other things. He wants to take a break. It's been a whirlwind the past 6 months or so for him. You know, if you followed anything that he's done on social media, it's really been incredible how much, momentum this picked up as soon as he put out that first video of the three orbs surrounding the airplane, and then it disappears, and questions have arisen since then. And I understand that to some of you, Ashton is very controversial. Some of you don't like him. Some of you are probably very psyched that I have him back on the show because you love what he does, and that's fine. You can be polarizing all you want. I'm not here to say who to like and who not to like. I'm here to have a conversation with someone who has an opinion on something and who has evidence to provide to back up his opinion. And that's exactly what we do here today. And I will say this, too, before we go into this. And I regret to say this only because I don't do this on purpose to draw something out. But this is part one of my conversation with Ashton Forbes. There is a part two. And again, I'm not doing this on purpose to draw something out or to get more clicks or anything like that. That's not what I'm doing. I'm breaking this into two parts, again, like I did with Anthony Williams last time, because there's just so much information in here, and we spoke for over an hour. This conversation went a lot longer than I intended it to, and that was fine, because we both realized, hey, this is really interesting stuff we're talking about now, so we kept going, and it went down a path that I wasn't expecting as well. So that's what made this very interesting, and that's what ended up making it go a little bit longer than I originally intended. I was not intending a two-parter, but that's just the way things go sometimes. That's how this naturally evolved as we were talking. So this is part one of my conversation with Ashton Forbes as we discuss what he's learned as he kind of closes the book on MH370 on his investigation, and also what he's learned about himself and where things are right now as it stands as we approach the 10th anniversary of the disappearance of MH370. So here is part one of myself with Ashton Forbes. And here we are today for interview number three together on the Unidentified Alien Podcast Weekly Edition with Ashton Forbes. Ashton, thanks so much for coming back on here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Stephen, I'm glad to be here and I'm glad to be talking to your audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I know they're happy to hear you back with me again. I think, well, look, there's always going to be people who hate on both of us, and there's going to be people who love to hear what we have to say. So when we can come together, I think that's exciting for, you know, our listeners and people who kind of follow what's going on and, you know, some things we put out. So it's cool to collaborate here and there and get Absolutely. You back on the show. There's a lot to get to, man. And there's mainly because you're kind of shifting gears. So we're going to get to that. But before we get into how Ashton is shifting gears into some other subjects, I first want to come back to where it all began with, of course, the disappearance of MH370. We're actually approaching the 10th anniversary. Unbelievably, March 8th, 2014 is when MH370 disappeared, and no sign of it since then. And of course, that's when all the conjecture and the theories and the hypotheses and the conspiracies come up from there. And here we are just about 10 years later, still talking about it. And of course, you made waves with your videos showing what could have happened to it with this, you know, teleportation technology. So what is, as we approach this 10th anniversary now, what is the latest that you've come across with the MH370 investigation?
Well, I think the biggest revelations are that you still don't have anybody in the mainstream media talking about this theory at all. It's not even that they are like not bringing me up. They're not even bringing up the idea that it could be a fire, right? Which is bizarre, because I watch random podcasts, hear random people, and they talk about having seen the videos, right? And so it's, the information is known and it's out there. And instead, they've, you know, the media is sitting there talking to guys who are on a fishing boat that's only a fraction of the size of the plane, going, oh, I pulled up a whole wing of a 777. You know, it's like they're willing to entertain the most crackpot ideas that have no evidence whatsoever, right? But as long as it's something that's comfortable, right? And yeah, when you look at these videos, it's something that's not comfortable. And I'm not going to expect everybody to look at those videos right now and go, oh, yep, that's what happened to the plane. But that is what happened to the plane. I think that people need more time to come to terms with the idea that there's something so far beyond what we think is possible, but it's out there and potentially we even have it. And this kind of goes back to what you mentioned early on about me, you know, stepping away from the case. We've pretty much uncovered everything that there is to uncover around the case. There's a few more pieces that I'm going to be putting out around the debris and the debris modeling. I think that people that are familiar, I don't like to dig too much into politics, but people that are familiar with COVID, for example, realize that models don't mean very much. And that's the same thing when it comes to debris patterns and debris ocean current stuff. You know, they use this ocean currents to try to say that, oh, this debris that was found in Africa, like, you know, proves that this plane crashed in near Australia. And you're like, well, that's thousands of miles away, right? So they had to come up with some analysis for that. We've learned that the SATCOM devices are easily hackable. They all have zero-day exploits. Military could easily hack those. Just this morning, I was looking at another pilot who was actually like part of the search, apparently. And he was saying how they knew the next day that the plane was not in the South China Sea, that didn't crash there, and that they were searching to the west, which the west is where the videos take place, Nicobar Islands. So when you look at the totality of everything, also, I'll bring up the Australian Peter. I'm forgetting his last name, but he was part of the Australian Navy and part of the search. And they knew, and he admits that they knew that something was wrong with wherever they're searching, that they shouldn't find nothing along the seventh arc, right? Mm-hmm. And that either they searched in the wrong spot or something else was wrong. I think even the ATSB, the current ATSB director as well, said something to the same effect, right? And one day people realized that the only difference between those videos being real and this narrative of the South Indian Ocean is 10 rows on an Excel spreadsheet, right? And I think that when people realize that, and that when some of this more technology, this advanced technology that we think is impossible, starts to get disclosed, that's when people will look back at these videos and go, wait a minute, that does make more sense, right? You can't have a plane crash in 2014 without being tracked, no acoustic detections, no radar signatures, not being seen on satellite, phones still ringing, all the stuff that we've talked about in previous podcasts. So this is why I'm going, okay, people have gotten so viscerally angry over the idea of these videos being real. And they've directed that anger at me, which is completely unwarranted. They've made up all kinds of fake stories in their head. One quick anecdote I want to give, just so that people understand what's kind of going on, is that there was a woman that replied in one of my posts where I was talking about, or maybe making a joke or talking about the negative feedback. And she goes, imagine what it's like to be a woman. And I kind of thought about that for a second. And I realized is that what a lot of these people do is they put you into their life. Like, they imagine there's a relationship there between me and them that doesn't exist. Mm. And then they build up stories in their head about me, right? And this is what they do to people. I'm sure there's other UFO celebrities they do this to as well. But they make these stories up in their head, and then they try to figure out how to rationalize that I'm some kind of monster, that, you know, it's like they imagine it's like an abusive relationship between me and them, and that they have to get back at it. And when you put it into that context, then you can realize why people will be so abusive and toxic, is that because they've decided in their minds that you're some kind of monster, liar, deceiver, or whatever, because you're telling them stuff that they don't want to hear. And so that's the part too, where it's like, I think the best thing for the case is after I finish these last few pieces, they'll be going out in the next couple of days, to just step back from it and maybe even step back from UFOlogy. I really haven't decided on that front. But I'm realizing I'm not as interested in the UFO videos anymore than I was even like a year ago. Cause once you've seen like the Holy Grail, it's like, how can you go back to lights flashing around in the sky? Right? Like, I want military videos that are like high quality, that are showing like black trails in front of orbs and like defying gravity, right? Like, that's the stuff that I like.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Because, well, and here's the thing, right? So if we move back a little bit,
sure,
to when you first started to make this public, when your analysis came out and the videos came out, of course, showing the three orbs circling the plane and the plane disappearing. I want to go back a little bit. How long ago was that when this all started for you? Because it seems like a long time ago, but this is less than a year ago, right?
Yeah. That's funny, because I also think back to the Danny Jones podcast where he's like trying to admonish me about how, oh, some of these murder criminal people that saw these murder crimes like investigate for like 10 years and you've only been doing it for a few months. And I'm just going, well, that doesn't really matter, right? What matters is the body of evidence and information that you can absorb and analyze, right? And of course, you know, it takes a while, but I actually think that we've gone through like everything pretty much. There's of course some stuff there still on the fringe that's possible, but you know, I spent like every waking moment outside of my job like doing this for months on end. But yeah, it's only been 6 months, and you know, even when I talk to my parents who live nearby and I go visit them pretty frequently, they're like, you've changed completely, right? And they don't mean it in like a bad way. They mean it in a good way, which is kind of funny, because they won't even talk to me about the MH370 investigation.
That's pretty interesting. So you get to take a break a little bit there. I just want to ask you that though, in that short time frame, because you have exponentially grown I guess people's awareness of you, your profile has grown exponentially over the past 6 months due to this investigation and you coming out with this, and kind of, you know, in a revolutionary way, honestly, with showing these videos and the analysis that you came out with and all the attention it got. From 6 months ago to now, how have you changed? I was wondering that. What do you see in yourself where you're like, man, I am totally different in this aspect now than I was, you know, back in August or September?
It's a great question. I mean, first thing is I'd say that I have purpose now, right? I used to be the kind of guy that would just do my job, and then it's like, okay, what's on Netflix, right? Or what video game do I want to play next? Or, you know, and you thought I but I was thinking about it, like, it feels like there's like this albatross that's weighing me down, right? And when you start to realize that there is potentially this, that we're not at the edge of science, we're like in the beginning of it, and that we have this much farther to go, it's like, wow, that gives you a whole new purpose. And that's where I would think about the JFK moon speech a lot, in terms of having our kind of common goals bring us together, you know? And that's what I think has energized me, motivated me to do all the podcasts, the investigation, even posting on social media, which takes a lot of time and effort as well, and doing all of that. And then the other way that it's changed me is just from the way that I see the world. And I think that anybody that, you know, takes the red pill, let's say, they'll have something like this happen where they kind of have a bit of an epiphany about the world, see it in a completely new light. And for me, it's not that I believe in every conspiracy that's out there. I just believe that, no, if I could quote Mick West, actually, which I never thought I would.
Wow. I think I just need to cut that part out and have Ashley.
In his Skeptical Inquirer article, he kind of revealed his own issues, where he talks about that he got involved because it was getting too big. And that if somebody can believe that this type of thing is possible, then they have no problem believing in, I think he quoted QAnon and the election being stolen, misinformation. But the point there is actually rings true, is that if they can pull off a conspiracy of this magnitude and convince people like Mick West and other people that aren't nearly as skeptical of him that this was some pilot suicide scenario, which makes no sense whatsoever, then they can really do probably a lot more as well, right? And that's the part that opens my mind, as well as the idea that this technology is real and it's being hidden from us. And how are they hiding it, right? And that's the part, too, where you realize that the landscape is a lot different. The podcast I just clipped and posted, where they talk about they knew the plane was in the wrong spot, you know, they look at the videos and they go, you know, or they say, how could somebody have hidden this, right? If that's real, how could they have hidden this? If this plane went to Diego Garcia, how could they have hidden all these people? Well, bad news is, condolences to the families, I don't think everybody made it. The second thing is that look at the leaker, Lieutenant Commander Edward C. Lynn. This is a guy who potentially literally leaked the videos. What did they do to him? They threw him in prison and made sure nobody could talk to him. They ruined his life. The videos were out on the internet. Nobody picked them up. The media won't touch them. The government has complete control of the media, right? And you realize that it's a lot easier to hide this stuff. And this goes back to UFOlogy, right? This is me handing UFOlogy the answer on a silver platter, right? Is that not only are these videos real, not only is the technology real, it's also a situation where this also explains how they're able to hide it really, really easily, right? What I'll say on that front is that the scientists, the ones that know, the people that know, first of all, it's all compartmentalized. So a very small number of people know. The ones that are in the know, they're either afraid, they're bought off. They know that even if they were to come out, they're not going to be believed. Some of them do come out and actually literally talk openly about the stuff, and they just get discredited. They get told they're crazy. They get called cranks, whatever, right? Heck, the guerrilla skeptics will go and edit their Wikipedia pages and put a bunch of, you know, speculation and opinion on their Wikipedia pages. And then there's the ones that just get off on knowing it. Believe it or not, there's actually people who just get off on the idea that they know about magical technology and nobody else does. So when you begin to put it into that context, then you can understand how it's been possible that they've not just been keeping this information secret for 10 years, which is when the plane disappeared, but potentially for decades and decades. And when I started to realize that, I went, wow, I'm up against something that's way more powerful than I would have ever imagined in my whole life before this whole investigation.
Yeah. And it's actually funny, because that's what I was going to ask is, you know, I guess maybe you kind of answered it a little bit, but why, I guess, is my question of why would they go through all this trouble, meaning the searchers, the media, you know, as far as the media is, you know, flat out ignoring what's been presented. People searching for the plane, if they're searching in the wrong spot and these guys know, hey, we're searching in the wrong spot. Why are they doing that? It just seems counterproductive. So what is the reasoning behind that? Is it really just to show face? Is it to say, hey, we tried and we're, you know, they're basically pawns in this cover up, essentially, of there is technology used that we don't want the general populace knowing about. So let's mask it this way.
Yeah. So my final scenario, the story that I believe at this point that makes the most sense in my mind is espionage, because what you just said requires state-sponsored actors, not just any state-sponsored actors either. It needs the most powerful state-sponsored actors on the face of the planet, the ones that control most of the media. And which government is that? The United States government. And that's hard to say as somebody who is an American, that I do love my country. But the scenario that makes the most sense is that this whole thing was set up from the beginning, that even before this plane took off, they already knew what was going to happen. The fact that this plane goes dark at the place that it does between radars doesn't seem like it would be accidental. I think that the fire did happen. I think it was a lithium ion battery fire. I think that they could have ignited the lithium ion battery fire, and that could be the whole point of diverting the plane. And then the only question there is, who took control of the plane? Did we take control of the plane using AWACS the moment that plane went dark? Or did the pilot really turn around and go to Penang, which was the closest airport, and then we communicated with them on, either an encrypted channel or just on the air, and we've classified all the rest of those communications, right? It doesn't take as much as you think in order to cover this up. We've got 19 witnesses that corroborate that fire, so I'm very certain that there was a fire on board this plane. And then you think, well, what's the point of covering this up? The technology, right? Now, that motive, most likely scenario is those 20 Freescale semiconductor scientists and engineers. They're probably defecting to China or going to China to bring the intellectual property to them or what have you. There could be other scenarios and motives that are possible. Like, I think the next most plausible one in my mind is there's like one VIP on board this plane that is extremely important, that it was either taking the information with them or, was somebody that had enough connections to be able to call and assist. But you've got 8 national Chinese nationals from this company and 12 Malaysian nationals, all from this company, way too many people. Some of them are traveling with their whole families. Like, it just, the whole scenario is weird, right? If this is a 1-week trip, why is your whole family coming with you? Why were they coming up with these microchips that were like smaller than a dimple in a golf ball? Why are they all connected to the U.S. aerospace and defense? Why is it that superconductivity is happening like right now? And that's like the precursor for quantum computers, right? To me, those connections are not coincidental. And I think even the information that people say, well, what about the 4 people with the patent that reverted to the Rothschild? I even think that might be intelligence community disinformation, because those people weren't even on the plane. We checked. But that does put a conspiracy theory out there that people can just knock down and go, yes, these people believe in dumb conspiracy theories, right? But at the end of the day, it could literally, the whole point of doing this could literally be the various engineers who are on board this plane who figured that stuff out. And then this answers the rest of the question. So why the cover up? Because you have to cover this up, because this technology is too big. And then if you look at the cover up, it's not this meticulous cover up. It was a sloppy effort, right? This is what I said probably early on, is that it's just like they threw a little bit of dirt on it. But when you start to dig into it, the whole thing falls apart. Like nothing, the stories that are out there make no sense. And once you realize that it's just the difference between one narrative and another is 10 rows on an Excel spreadsheet, everything begins to fall into place about, it wasn't a suicidal pilot at all. It was a fire event. And, this is too complex for random hijackers, right? This wasn't a 9/11 style hijacking. This was something much more sophisticated. I think that, yes, like Malaysian government was probably used as pawns. They probably didn't know exactly what happened, right? And this is, again, the compartmentalization of information. Now, they potentially knew the United States government was the one that did something, but then they got kind of told that they have to be silent about it, right? And that even the pilots that are searching, right, they don't know. They know something's wrong because they know they're searching to the west, and all the TV stations are going, whoa, we're looking in the South China Sea. And they're going, well, we're actually looking in the Andaman Sea over to the west, right? And then it was until days and days later that the TV tells the public, right? And this is them forming a new narrative. They're like, crap, okay, what narrative can we sell quick? Okay, let's say it went to the South Indian Ocean. Well, where are we going to say it turned in the South Indian Ocean? It can't fly directly over Indonesia, right? Well, we'll just, exactly where it disappeared, we'll say that that's where it just makes a sharp turn in the South Indian Ocean. It's like, are people going to believe that? Oh, they'll believe whatever we tell them, right? We just spam it on the TV a million times. And you know what? We'll wait. They didn't release the... Inmarsat did not release the raw telemetry data. until May 28th, 2014. Hmm. The satellite video was published May 19th, 2014.
Right.
Just yesterday, I spoke to Mike Exner. He likes to come into my replies. He's a member of the independent group. And I'll give respect to Mike Exner. He is not afraid to come and challenge the stuff that I put forth. But at the same time, like my personal true opinion is that he's fallen victim to misinformation from the government because he trusts authority too much. And they were able to put on a show for him and convince him that, oh, yep, here's this data. This is really great. And the only reason why you would wait that long to release the data is that you have to fudge it. You have to cover it up. You have to make sure there's nothing in there where someone's going to find an error, right? And he said that he didn't even know that the Inmarsat data was real and legit until June of 2014. That's when the second video came out, right? So if the guy in the independent group that are literally the ones that came up with the analysis, the novel analysis of figuring out where these pings lead, didn't even know if that Inmarsat data was correct until June. How did somebody make these videos before May that has coordinates in them that's the exact location where the plane turns into the South Indian Ocean? Right. I just want the people listening to think about that for a second, because there's so much extremely strong evidence that these videos are real, including the fact that it's a literal Citrix session. We even have the person who encoded the video. They looked at the metadata. They were potentially using a Mac when they screen recorded this. Hmm. They used QuickTime to encode it, supposedly. So we even think we know the type of computer the person used to log into the Citrix session to do the screen recording. Right? Like it's a ton of evidence. These are not things that you put into your fake hoax video that you're just throwing online for the kicks, right? Like this stuff is way too specific. So that's the part two where I think that if people really look at the weight of the evidence and the real humans that were witnesses, and the batteries that are extremely dangerous, they can find the answer. It's been sitting there staring at us the whole time. It's just this mental block of, I can't believe that there can be flying orbs, or the idea that we can move faster than the speed of light. That's the thing that holds people back. Oh, one last thing as well, because you asked how this has changed me. From a scientific understanding, it's changed me as well, which is that I realized just two factors about the universe that maybe I speculated on before but wasn't sure on. One of those is that there's an extra dimension that, and I don't know, I don't want to call it like the fifth dimension or whatever. I like to call it the Matrix, because just like the movie The Matrix, it's an underlying framework within which our reality is projected onto. And this is very important because this is now how you can go faster than the speed of light, you know, like the book A Wrinkle in Time. You just take your piece of paper, you bend it, and now you can have these two points touching, and this is how you can skip, right? You can bend gravity, bend space-time around an object, and this is how you can achieve superluminal speeds. That's one thing that I've determined that I'm absolutely 100% convinced is the state of our reality. This implies that, as well, the holographic principle is correct. I won't be calling it a simulation anymore after today, right now. Instead, again, I think it's more of a matrix situation. And the reason why I do that is because I don't want to diminish the value of our lived experiences. What we're doing right now is still real. There's nothing fake about it. Doesn't mean that this is just doesn't matter. Like, this still, of course, matters. I think that the goal in life should be to bring other people up, right? But it does mean that there's some underlying aspect to our reality that we are not seeing when we move around from day to day. The second thing is that space is not empty, right? So these are somewhat linked as well. And if space is not empty, because you have this interaction between this extra matrix as well as what we see painted upon it, that means that there is this capability to break through to that underlying framework. And when you break through that underlying framework, or you know, you imagine that even if something seems like empty, like this space here, there's still enough energy in this space that, like people would say, there's enough energy in a glass of water to vaporize all the Earth's oceans, right? That's the kind of concept that we need to be aware of, because this now opens the door to other advanced technology. And it's a situation where it's a Pandora's box, right? So if you want over unity, because then we can open our system up to the vacuum of space-time, and now we can borrow energy from, you know, that underlying framework or that empty space, which is not empty, then we can get more energy out of the system that we produce than what we put in. And this is also how we can also break the Schwinger limit, which allows us to achieve energy densities that are so high that we can break through that fabric of reality to bend space-time around an object. And so, yeah, these are the types of scientific understandings which don't break the laws of physics. They just bend them. They require us to look at them through a different lens. And once we do that, the whole Pandora's box will open and we will get everything. We will get you want cloaking fields, you want force fields, you want fusion power, you want free energy, teleportation, faster than light communication. But also what comes with it is doomsday weapons. And most likely the reason why the U.S. government is covering this up is not just the special access programs that this is all hidden in, but also because of the implications of just destroying the entire planet. Not like a city, but like the whole planet. That to me seems like the most logical reason why the people that are hiding it are the ones that are going, we have to keep this hidden.
And that is the end of part one. So a lot to consider there, a lot to think about, a lot to take in. And like I said at the start of this, super interesting conversation. Obviously, if you don't believe what Ashton has said from the start, then maybe you look at this kind of with a sideways eye, and that's fine too. Just take it all in and consider everything that's being said. That's, you know, all I ever try to do here on UAP. But, you know, this was something that I said to Ashton as well after he was talking about, you know, the final statement he was making there before this, you know, end of part one. It kind of reminded me of, you know, the famous line from Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. I couldn't help but to think of that when we're talking about the possible evolution in technology that would include, you know, bending space-time and bending the laws of physics, not breaking them, but bending them and having these capabilities. But also, if you have them, you have to try to figure out how do you handle these capabilities responsibly, these capabilities that would, you know, break some people's minds, quite frankly. It would destroy what we think we have an understanding of and shatter our reality. So when you have those type of things, or if you have those types of things, how do you handle it responsibly? Also knowing that, like Ashton said there, it could be, you know, used or turned into some type of horrific weapon, which is always a possibility with any new type of technology. Unfortunately, there's a good and bad side to everything, which, again, the Pandora's box effect. So, again, a lot to consider, a lot to think about, which is why I wanted and needed, really, to break this up into two parts, and that is the end of part one. That said, I will have part two out within the next few days, so I will keep you updated on that. Make sure you follow along on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. I still call it Twitter, so I'm just going to stop calling it X. I just don't like the name. I'm used to saying Twitter, so that's what I'm going to keep saying from here on out. I'm not saying anymore, whatever you want to call it. I'm just going to say Twitter from now on. You know what it is. So if you want to follow the show on Twitter, I keep everything updated there at UAPodcast850. Follow along. I'll have updates on there on when part two of this conversation, the final part, part two of this conversation, is going to come out. And that one, just to kind of give you a little preview of it, we discuss a couple of things. We address the what was called the debunk. If you remember back a few months ago, it was at the end of the year in 2023, the video came out that was alleging to prove that what Ashton was presenting in his MH370 assertions in the videos that he was putting out, that Ashton's things were hoax, they were fake, and he had been duped and he had fallen for, you know, some type of fake video. And that person came out, and you know, Kim.com, who has a big following on social media, especially Twitter, YouTube, said that he was going to pay a bounty to this person. Well, a lot of that fell through, and we never really heard, you know, a big explanation on what happened there. Was the video hoaxed? Who was this person that said that they could prove that the MH370 videos were fake? So Ashton answers all of that in part two, explains, you know, what the situation was there, and how he came to the conclusion that this person who says that they had figured it out was actually lying. So we're going to cover that really interesting background on that I didn't know until he told us about it. And also, I kind of had a revelation in part two as well, this discussion, when it came to the entire conversation surrounding the disappearance of MH370. And it actually sent chills down my spine as we were talking, when I kind of had a thought pop into my head. So There's a lot there that we cover in part two, so definitely do not miss out on that, and I will let you know when that's coming out. Like I said, on Twitter, at UAPodcast850 is where you can follow me there. And on all social media, YouTube, TikTok, you can find me on there as well. And on email, if you'd like to shoot me an email, anything you have in mind. I know I'm really bad at answering these, and I apologize. I try to get back to everybody, and I do eventually. So if it's been a few weeks and you wrote to me and I haven't responded, I sincerely, no kidding, sincerely apologize. But I do get back to everybody. It just might take me longer than I'd like, originally planned. So if you'd like to send me an email, have anything you want to say, a story or a comment, and you don't use social media a lot or you prefer to use email, it's sdieneruap@gmail.com. That's sdieneruap@gmail.com if you'd like to send me one there. I also have a Proton email. If you'd like, you can ask me what that is. Just shoot me an email and I'll give that one out as well. If you have something in, you know, super secret you were trying to send me, then we can also do that on Proton. Just shoot me an email of that Gmail account. I'll let you know what that is. But until then, that will do it for now on this part one with my latest discussion with Ashton Forbes. I will talk to you again soon on part two as we finish out this conversation. It's Stephen Diener right here on UAP, the Unidentified Alien Podcast. Thank you so much, as always, for listening and for making me and this show a part of this discussion. I really do appreciate it. Thank you for taking me in. I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.